You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of Wicked Horror Show was broadcast live to Facebook. In this episode, we're joined by writer, director, cinematographer, Chance Shirley. We're talking to Chance about his really just fun movies, Hide and Creep, For a Few Zombies More, which is a sequel to Hide and Creep, which happened many years after, as well as Interplanetary, which is a really fun sci-fi-ish kind of horror. But they're very funny, very dry humor. It's a really good time. I think Wolfie brought Chance to the show, and we appreciate it. I had never seen these movies, and I really enjoyed them. And as always, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show just like this one. Also, head over to thedorkening.com and check out all the other shows on the Dorkening Podcast Network. We have The Dorkening, Wicked Horror Show, A Dork Physique, Apocalypse Now? Secret Underground Hideout. And then the new show, I'll announce it now. Sorry, Leo. It was going to be the Ultimate Video Game Show, but that's no longer. It's now Dorks R Us. Anyways, whatever. First a word from our sponsor, and then enjoy the show.
Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Okay, and here we are. With us today, we have Kevin.
What's going on, everybody?
Wolfman.
Yo,
yo.
Yo.
Yo, 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 yo.
And our guest of the evening, Chance Shirley, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I feel like I should have a thing to do. I don't have a howl or a yo.
Or don't. I wish they didn't, but that's okay. I don't know if you never really introduced yourself, Leo. Leo Pond, obviously the man behind the camera.
Behind
the camera, behind the buttons. I don't know.
Behind the buttons.
The monkey behind the poop. So anyways, so Chance, we were talking a little bit before, before we went live, and I was able to check out you sent us the link for three of your movies. I was able to check out two and a half, I guess, like two and maybe a little less than a half. And one thing I thought was really cool. Well, first off, this is something I noticed with a lot of independent filmmakers, and I love it, is that you tend to work with the same people a lot. But it's awesome because you see something like Hide and Creep, which came out in 2004 and I thoroughly enjoyed. And then you go all the way up to A Few Zombies More, which is the newer one that just came out recently, right?
Yeah, well, I think we finished it up in 2015 or 16. So, but it's taken a long time to finally get out on home video and everything. But yeah, it's relatively recent.
Yeah. So you look at both of those movies, and it's a continuation of Hide and Creep, and the amount of growth as from everybody, from the acting to the cinematography to the, like, I don't know. I mean, it's really cool to see. I really enjoy that. Like, there's a lot of indie filmmakers that I watch that use the same people, and like, it's like, wow, that was the best I've seen that person so far. That was awesome. Like, they're learning and they're getting more comfortable in front of the camera, and it's really cool to see. So it looks like you have a pretty good stable of people that you tend to work with.
Do you guys ever watch any of the Christopher Guest movies, like Waiting for Guffman?
So
I mean, you know, I'm a musician too, and so I'm a huge Spinal Tap fan. So I was always into Christopher Guest stuff, and I really like how David Mamet does it too. There's a lot of Scorsese. There's a lot of like big time directors.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter. Yeah.
John Carpenter, yeah. I mean, how many movies did he make with Kurt Russell? Like five?
Yeah.
and Keith David, he would use those guys over and over. And yeah, we're in Birmingham, Alabama, so we don't necessarily have, an acting pool like you would have in New York or L.A., But we have guys we like to work with and that we have fun with. And yeah, I mean, I love those guys. And if they'll keep showing up for us, then we'll keep casting them. You know, they're wonderful.
So just one thing, Kim, I'm just kind of curious if you caught this in what? The two movies. The guy that plays Lee played two characters.
Which one is Lee?
Lee is the bearded Alabama ass kicker.
You know, shooting glasses.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. He played two characters in that one.
In both movies. He played two characters.
I didn't catch that.
He's pretty good.
The guy with the mustache is also Lee.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. His name is Michael Shelton, but yeah. And he also played a character named Michael and he played a character named Lee in Hyde and Creek.
Yeah, Lee's nice. The actual same character. And then, yeah, Michael was, well, we killed off Lee and Michael in the first movie, but we managed to bring Lee back, but Michael stayed dead. And then,
yeah. So one of the things that I also like, even with the first one with Hyde and Creep, and you said you're a musician, so I'm assuming there's some kind of play into this, but I was really impressed with the music choices throughout the movies, you know? So with Hyde and Creep, there was a lot of like acoustic guitar work that maybe wouldn't necessarily think you would think would fit in certain kinds of scenes, but it really did kind of play to it and it fit really well. And I was like, oh, this is a really good soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm real proud of the soundtrack. So that's actually one of my bands that I've played with off and on forever is a band called The Exhibits. And the guy who did the music for the first movie is Eric McGinty, who leads that band. If you hear like a rock song in the first movie, that's probably me on drums because that would have been like, so basically he wrote some acoustic stuff that he played himself. And then he wrote some more like kind of rock and roll stuff with like bass and drums that the whole band played on. But yeah, that's all Eric McGinty. He's a really talented guitar player. We were playing a week ago from tonight, actually. So we still play together occasionally. We're all older now, but you know, we can still manage to get out of the house every now and then.
Yeah. I'm stuck in the you know, I'm at the point too where it's just like, I'm too old to go out and play anymore. I don't want to be the old guy at the bar, because I can remember being the younger guy at the bar being like, who's this old guy I think he is coming up here taking time from us? So I don't want to be that guy. But anyways, no, but I really enjoyed the choice of music in both of them. I haven't it's something where I haven't noticed it as much in Interplanetary, but I haven't seen the whole thing. But there's a few parts of both movies. Both Hyde and Creep and For a Few Zombies More, where I was like, I really like the song, like, and it fits, like, and again, it's something where it may not necessarily be an obvious choice for the kind of scene, like a scene where there's a lot of action going on and, you know, a battle, and it's like pretty calm music.
Yeah.
But it almost adds to it, you know, I mean, it did add to it, where it just like, I noticed the music a lot more and I'm like, it still plays to what's going on right now. Like, it was just, I don't know, it was really cool. Really good choices.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in the new movie, we actually, Eric wrote one new song for the new movie, which plays over the end credits. But most of the music in the new movie, you know, there's a DJ, a post-apocalyptic DJ character. So kind of in that spirit, a lot of the music in that movie is just needle drops. You know, it's just rock songs. And all those bands we were lucky enough to get, they're all local Birmingham bands that I'm that I'm fond of, and some of them I knew and some of them I didn't know, but it was really, I'm really proud of that, even though all I did was ask, you know, I didn't really have anything to do with the soundtrack other than picking the songs and begging people to let us use them, but I'm really proud of the score we were able to put together for the second movie just from a bunch of talented local guys, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. Yeah. To have that inside thing there, that's good.
The guy that plays the DJ, he's also from Hyde and Creep. He was one of the church zombies and the cemetery zombie.
Yeah, so exactly.
I take it you've seen this quite a bit, Wolfie.
Yes. No, I told him earlier this when I first saw the movie, I really liked it, and then I found it at a Hollywood Video when it was going out of business when they were having a fire sale. So I picked it up, and it is one of my favorite independent zombie films. It's one of those ones where, when you want to talk about zombie movies to someone, you're like, oh, have you seen Hyde and Creep? They're like, what's that? It's like, if you haven't seen it, you got to see it. And once you have seen it, you're infected, man, because it's so good.
Well, infected. The cool thing is, Hide and Creep is available to watch right now on Amazon Prime. So if you're a Prime member, you can just log in and check it out. And
wait a minute, is this the edited version, or is this not the is this the unedited version?
If you watch it on Prime, you get the full uncut R-rated version.
What the hell did I watch it on YouTube for then? I had Prime.
That's the link I had.
I know. No. I'm
going
to have to rewatch it now.
Yeah. I didn't want to overload you guys with links, so I just sent you guys. I knew everybody had YouTube, so that would be the easy one for everybody to watch.
Yeah, I love the cut that you put in there, though, right before the that one scene where you stopped it. You gave a description about.
We were talking about that earlier. Yeah. And to be honest with you, too, I was just like, is he being for real, or is this like something he's doing just to be funny? Or I didn't know, because that's the thing too, is there's a lot of humor in these movies as well.
Yeah,
but it's not over the top, which I respect. It's
letting the humor come naturally from the situation.
Yeah,
it seems like it comes off really natural how they're like the jokes are cracking during.
Exactly. If we were all in a zombie apocalypse, these are jokes that we would make. Yeah. You know, to keep ourselves safe.
I've never seen the cut version, so.
Well, watch it on YouTube and be like, why am I watching this?
Like I said before, if you want to check it out, Hide and Creep is available on Amazon Prime right now. And if you check out the show notes down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us, you can find a link right there. But also, after you watch that, go and pick up For a Few Zombies More. And actually, we have a trailer for that. We're going to play that right now.
There's this guy. He's a scientist. He's working on a vaccine for the zombie virus or whatever it is. We should rescue this guy.
What?
The scientist. We should rescue him.
I'm not rescuing anybody.
Security at the powerhouse is actually pretty slack. I mean, everybody who works there is tweaked up on meth and packing heat, but there aren't that many designated security guards.
This is gonna be easier than I thought.
Shootouts?
What, like today?
We're back.
Sorry, we're just talking about faking interest on Thanksgiving when you're with your families. That's all.
Try to avoid
nothing.
If you got like one of those 50 people gatherings that you've got to go to,
I have two that I have to go to. Yeah, I mean it'll be fine. Like it's good people. You know, I only see them around the holidays.
Right.
So like, hey, what have you been doing for the last year? Oh, the same exact thing. Cool.
Yeah, small talk can get kind of exhausting in those situations sometimes. Yeah,
but the only thing I have to talk about is this show, and at some point I just feel like I'm bragging and I'm like, I gotta shut up, people are gonna think that I'm arrogant. Like, I just gotta shut up about it. Anyways,
So, Chance, when you got into writing the original movie, I mean, did you always want to write horror films? I mean, you said earlier that you and Chuck are like big horror fans, but did you always want to write one?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Chuck is the horror expert. I am sadly a horror amateur compared to him. But this was 100 years ago before we had YouTube and everything. So our small town, Birmingham, we got a film festival in like 1999. And Chuck and I were kind of movie buffs, but we'd never thought about making a movie because what are you going to do with a movie? You know, I mean, it's 1999. And when the film festival came through, they played a couple of local short films, and Chuck and I were like, oh my gosh, we could make a movie, and the festival might show it, and somebody might see it. So from there, we did a couple of short films. One of them was a science fiction movie. One of them was like a weird, funny slapstick thing. And then our third short was actually like a minute and a half long zombie comedy that we had actually shot for a friend of ours' birthday. It was like this really weird birthday present. It was like, we'll make him a zombie movie that'll be like 3 minutes long, you know. And so we shot and edited this movie, this short, in like 6 hours. I mean, top to bottom. I mean, we just knocked it out, you know. And we had spent all this time and all this effort on these other shorts. And people liked those fine, but this one that we'd spent no time on, people just went crazy for. And like I said, the feature idea was kind of an expansion of that short zombie movie. I think the DVD that Wolfie has might have that short on there somewhere. It's called Birthday Call, actually.
Oh yeah, it's right there.
And it's probably on YouTube somewhere if anybody wanted to see kind of the seeds of that. But yeah, so we just kind of, you know, Chuck is more of a horror expert. I like horror movies and sci-fi movies. I'm really more of a sci-fi guy. At least I was more of a sci-fi guy. And so it just happened to be that our first feature happened to be a horror movie. And so now we're kind of like, you know, now we're kind of horror guy, or now we're horror filmmakers, you know, I mean, and since it's really making horror movies that really is where my love of horror, I love horror movies now. And I think one of the reasons I love them so much is because after you make one, you really respect like special effects and cinematography and the music, you see how all that stuff has to come together. And so then when I go and, watch the new Halloween movie, and they like stomp on that guy's head and his brains all fall out, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's like the coolest thing, because I just can't, you know, I know that some effects guy spent who knows how many days getting that gag to work. And then it's in the movie for like a second and a half, you know, it's just, yeah. it's
but it's stuff like that though. That's extremely memorable. So, right. You know, cause that was like my favorite, one of my favorite parts of the movie as well. I was just like, that was sick. Like that was awesome.
Yeah, I've been watching horror movies so long, but I mean, that was one of the charges I used to get out of horror films. Like when Friday the 13th came out back in 1980, I saw it in the drive-in. I was like 13 years old or something like that. And I just remember going, how'd they do that? That's so cool, you know? And that's the charge you get. And after a while, you're just kind of like, and Kevin and I got into a debate last week about whether or not you always want to know whether or not how the magic's done. I know a majority of how it's done, but I don't always want to know. I mean, it's just that kid in me that's like, just, you know, I mean, then let's be ignorant for a little while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll watch the movie, but then after the movie's over, I kind of want to be like, how'd they do that? Like, was that for real? Like, cause we've seen movies where I'm just like, so obviously that's like CG or that's like, yeah. Whatever. And then we have people on and like, no, that was practical. I'm like, what? How is that practical? And like, they'll explain it a little bit. I'm like, that's amazing. You know, like it was good enough where it looked like it may have been CG, you know?
Yeah. Like
say the CG looks awesome all the time, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. There was,
I think for gore effects, especially, it's so rare that I see CG that looks as good as like a real practical effect, you know, but you're talking about Friday the 13th. To this day, the scene where the arrow comes up, I think it's Kevin Bacon, the arrow comes up to his neck, you know, I don't get it. And I've got a friend who does special effects and who did special effects for our last movie, and he explained it to me, and I'm like, I still don't understand.
It's just, no
it's
different.
An amazing effect. 1980 was it? I mean, this was forever ago, and it's amazing.
Yeah. It's no different than how they did the fake head scene in Reanimator. You know, basically, you know the
like Kevin Bacon was sitting in a chair underneath the bed, and there was a fake body attached to him, and then
yeah.
But still, it looks great. It looks like awesome. They pulled it off. Yeah, great. And then that was Savini, right? That did that.
Yeah.
But one of the things, like, because you mentioned how your friend, your partner in crime is a big movie buff, and that's one thing, especially with Hide and Creep, is there's a lot of, you know, like what we would do if we're talking to like someone about like, no, it's not really a zombie movie. It's that, you know, and actually for a few zombies more. It's the same deal, but there's like mention of like, you know, like, oh, you know, if you want to see a zombie movie, I can give you, you know, Dead Alive. It's actually called Brain Dead over in the, you know, whatever. And
right.
Yeah, we've all had these conversations.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I love that's at the very beginning of Hide and Creep where Chuck's having that conversation. And the guy's like, someone's calling his video shop saying, I want to rent out some movies. And he's like, well, there's only three really good movies, and they're all
there's only three good American zombie movies, and they're all made by the same person, and like all of them have already been rented. I think someone stole this one, and because they basically like he's speculating that they're all renting it because the zombie apocalypse is happening, and people want to know what they have to deal with, which I thought was pretty awesome.
He's like, well, you can rent Dead Alive, you know, which is Brain Dead. And they're like, oh, that's Australian. I want to see something American. He goes,
yeah.
And he's talking about Zombie, the Lucio Fulci. And like Kevin mentioned, you know, in the new one, he mentions 28 Days Later. He goes, but it's not really a zombie movie. And I've had that conversation.
Oh, yeah. And that's brought up a couple times in the movie. Because the other guy's just like, oh, some of the 20. He's like, the other guy's like, that's not a zombie movie. Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not a zombie movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the humor is really good. It's you know, in what I've seen on Interplanetary as well, the humor is pretty good in that as well. And it's not, like I said, it's not as over the top as some people tend to do. It's more realistic humor.
Yeah, it gets back to, like I was talking about Christopher Guest movies. You know, we're always trying to find the character driven humor. As I often say, you know, our movies are often campy, but we don't make them campy on purpose to be funny. We make them campy because we don't have any money. But the comedy that we're trying to do is hopefully, you know, smart character driven comedy. That's what we aim for, at least. Not that we're above, you know, a topless girl or, you know, showing a guy's dick either. But
yeah, but you make it into a joke.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not just like, hey, here's boobs just to have boobs. Yeah. But yeah, the one thing too, like I was talking about before, like the progression, like the look of the zombie in the original or in the first one, and then the look of the zombie, obviously that's progressed, but it's still not over the top. Like it's not like a big rotting zombie. It's like, you know, gray makeup with dark eyes. Like it's like old school, like, you know, Night of the Living Dead looking zombies, just a little ramped up. And I like that a lot as well, because it's, you know, you're obviously focusing on story and focusing on content as opposed to focusing on like, all right, we need to get the best makeup possible, but we're not gonna be able to pay for anything else, you know, in this movie because we're getting all this crazy stuff. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, that adds to the charm of it as well, I think.
Yeah. And you know, with the zombies, you know, some days you've got, you know, one zombie that you need for 2 hours. And so our makeup guy, Josh, is really great guy and really, really good at what he does. But you know, sometimes he would have 3 hours to make up one guy and he would get really detailed with it. And then some days you've got, I mean, there's one scene where we've got like 100 extras, give or take. And we had like three guys do makeup that day. And at that point you've got, okay, these five guys up front, we're going to make them up the best we can. If they're in the back, we're just going to throw some dirt on them and call them a zombie and be done with it. You know, so a lot of it just kind of depends on the day and how many, you know, how much time the makeup artist has and how much, you know,
screen time.
How many people we have to deal with?
Well, that's how Romero did it. I mean, for like Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, you know, if you wanted to be an extra, you would show up, and if like whoever got there first got to be zombie A, you know, the ones with the cuts and the cuts and the welts, and whoever got there second, you know, got to be zombie B, where it's a little bit of makeup and maybe you get a welt, and then the zombie C's were just the guys that just got like a lot of the a lot of the gray makeup on, they were the far background zombies, you know, and exactly. Everyone got a free t-shirt and a lunch out of it, so nothing wrong.
Yeah, but you want to be zombie A. That's the thing. Is you want to be
zombie A. That's
the way to show up early to be zombie A.
Yeah, exactly. Wake up on time and get there early. Don't sit there and be like, oh, I want to see what happens on Judge Judy or something. You got to go there.
Well,
I'm just saying, you the equivalent of Judge Judy back then. So here's a question about Hide and Creep. I don't know if I was looking at things too much or if there's maybe too many people that looked similar. But was there so the zombie that gets killed at the video store that he drops off the police station?
Yes.
Was he used multiple times in the movie?
Wow, that's I think that is our old friend Steve that gets killed early in the movie. I don't remember if he was in it again, to be honest. I haven't watched it in a while. I'd have to go back. He could be a background zombie at some point, but I don't think we used him a lot. Now the new movie, I was talking about Josh, our makeup guy. His sister is actually in the new movie like five times. She plays like a thug, and then she plays like four different zombies. So, but that movie's fresher on my mind because I was just working on that one.
Either that or there's people like have the same body type with the same facial hair. There's a lot of those zombies because I'm like, wait a minute, that's the guy. I remember that big beard. I wonder if it's the same dude. Like it happened a couple times. So I could have just been reading into it. I was also on my lunch break, you know? So
were you watching on your phone like that?
I was. It was on my phone. I was in my car because I take my lunch break in my car because why not? And I put it on my dashboard and it goes through the speakers in the car and everything. So I'm just like eating a sandwich, you know? Whatever.
You know, there's a lot of serious directors who get offended that people want to watch their movies on their phones, and I'm not one of those directors. I'm like, please watch my movie on your phone. That would make me so happy.
Well, I didn't want to watch it on my phone, but that was my option. Right. You know, I couldn't watch it on the computers at work because I would have lost my job. But it's now that I know that the unedited version is on Prime, I'm going to watch it again, and it won't be on my phone. It'll be on the projector, so it's going to be that whole wall right there.
See that white projector right above his head?
Yeah, it'll be on that wall. So I'll watch it large. I'll take pictures and I'll tag you in it.
That would be wonderful. All right. And you know, the great thing about Prime is every time somebody watches it, we get like 5 cents.
Ooh. There you go. You know what that means, guys. Put it on repeat. Just leave it up all night. Yeah, so let's get this guy 35 cents before the end of the month. Yeah.
When it first went on Prime, Chuck said that he was gonna put it on his Prime and just put it on a loop so we'd make a bunch of money on it. I was like, you know, Chuck, if the movie makes 5 cents, then because basically when we make our movies, we can't pay anybody up front because we don't have any money. So if the movie ever makes money, then everybody gets a cut. You know, so I told Chuck, I was like, well, Chuck, if the movie makes 5 cents on a screening, then you and I probably split like half a cent, maybe. And I got to think that whatever he's spending in electricity to keep his computer running is probably burning more than half a cent.
That's true. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm still going to do it. Still going
to
do it. Yeah.
So he needs to invest in solar panels.
Yeah.
So he's off the grid, you know.
Somehow we can beat this.
Yeah.
Sorry, Leo.
Your
local AT&T store. So just hit it on all the phones in the AT&T store.
I'll go to the Apple store. Yeah.
There you go.
Leo's been trying to say something for like a good half hour now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. The last item, if you want to make sure you check out Hide and Creep, the link is down below or up above, and we do have a trailer for it. So here we go. Hide and Creep.
Hello. Hello. I'd like to remind everyone that even though we're in the midst of an unholy siege, Downtown Foods is still open for business.
Still there? Did you say zombies?
Well, I mean, I don't know if they're zombies in the traditional Haitian voodoo sense of the word.
Department of Homeland Defense
was dropped here as soon as we heard.
Heard what?
The dead rising from the grave.
Apparently, the parking lot is currently clear of zombies. Zombies. If anyone needs to make a run for their vehicles, one of our associates would be happy to escort you.
And there we go. That's Hide and Creep, available now on Amazon Prime. If you are a Prime member, you can watch it for free tonight. So just click the link down below or up above. And then if you love that movie, which we know you will, the sequel is out today on Amazon Prime on VOD. Actually, not Amazon Prime. Amazon, it's available
on VOD. Yeah. It's not free on Prime. No. If you have Prime, you can still get it.
If you have Prime, you can get it shipped in like,
relatively
quickly. Get it for the weekend.
Exactly.
Order it today.
You can buy the DVD, Blu-ray, or on VOD. And also, today's episode, like every episode, is brought to you by Deadly Grounds Coffee. We played the ad in the beginning, but you know, I'm drinking maple walnut tonight. Kevin, I know you're not drinking anything.
I'm not drinking anything, but I had the end of the chocolate almond left. It wasn't enough for a full pot at work, so I mixed chocolate almond with maple walnut, and it was actually really good.
Well, that does sound good.
So I'm like, I gotta get Tom on the phone and be like, Tom, hook it up. No, but I'm gonna need to get some more soon because I'm down to like a quarter of a bag of Hell's Fury, and then we just have whatever's left of the maple walnut at work. So you'll be hearing from me soon, Tom.
Yeah, I grabbed a couple bags of maple walnut, pumpkin chocolate, and witch's brew to chocolate raspberry. So I'm gonna be brewing pumpkin over the holiday weekend. That's gonna awesome. I bought extra because I know the family's going to be drinking it up. But Deadly Grounds Coffee is, tons of different flavors or not flavored if you like your regular coffee like Kevin. And here we go. Here's the commercial. Here's Father Evil talking about Deadly Grounds Coffee.
Rise and shine, my sinners. When Father Evil starts his day, he gets a little deadly. Deadly Grounds Coffee has the richest, smoothest flavor you'll find anywhere. It's sinfully delicious. Once you go deadly, you never go back. Order yours at GetDeadly.com. Coffee's so good, it's scary. Right.
So now they're the sponsor of our network.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Like, we still obviously buy a ton of their coffee.
Yeah. I bought 9 bags just last week. And it's
already gone.
Actually, I'll probably be finishing the maple walnut this weekend. The first bag.
Yeah. The thing with Deadly Grounds too is it's not like overpoweringly with the flavor. Like, it's very subtle. And it's just really good coffee. And like, their dark roast is like super good, and it's not bitter at all. Like, it's just good coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to sometimes get like acid reflux with like coffee. This year, nothing. He does something special with the beans as he roasts it. And he's a local roaster here in Connecticut, which is awesome. But enough about Deadly Grounds Coffee. We are talking with Chance Shirley today. He has several movies out now. If you check the show notes down below or up above, depending on where you're watching us, you're going to find tons of information about him. And you also have a horror channel on Roku and iTunes as well. Not iTunes, Apple TV. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you remember that, Leo. I had forgot to hype that. So about a year or so ago, I started up a channel. It's called Mascot TV. You can find out where to get the apps and stuff at mascottv.net. And, I got the idea from like we used to have this UHF channel when I was a kid growing up, and they would show like old kung fu movies and sci-fi movies and horror movies and stuff in the afternoon. And when I got older, I realized, oh, the reason they showed the movies that they showed was a lot of them were public domain, so they didn't have to pay for them. Yeah. And I was like, I could show those movies and not have to pay for them either. And so it's really been a lot of fun. We broadcast from like 9 p.m. till 2 or 3 a.m. Eastern time every night. So if you're on the West Coast, then it's kind of an early thing. But it's been really fun, and I've learned a lot about public domain movies. I've learned a lot about like obscure Italian horror movies. There's all kind of crazy Italian science fiction movies. The Italians make some really interesting movies. Those have been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot. Spaghetti Westerns. We show spaghetti Westerns sometimes. So it's just whatever interesting I can find, that I can get the rights to, meaning that the rights are, you know, available to everybody, you know. I rip them and then line them up on the schedule, and we show. And we have like, we show like retro commercials and some old serials and some fun stuff like that too.
That's awesome. Well, is the channel, is it free or is it something that?
Yeah, it's free. So like I said, you can watch it on your phone if you just like through the web browser or whatever. But if you want to get the app for the Apple TV or the Roku, the apps are both free. And then make it a little more user friendly, you know. But it's pretty much, it'll pretty much stream on any modern computing device with a web browser.
I just bookmarked it on my phone.
Yeah, I'm gonna get it. Yeah, I have a Roku on both TVs, and so I will be putting that on my Roku. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's I haven't got to build it up as much as I would like. My goal with it eventually is to kind of make it the Turner Classic Movies of like trash cinema. You know, I'd love to do like some Robert Osborne type intros and histories, you know, to start every movie. Right now, I've probably got 5 or 6 intros for the 180 or so movies in the catalog. So I've got to work on the supplemental content, but if you're ever in the mood to like watch some trashy movies and not have to decide what to pick, you know, it's a fun stream.
That's awesome. Throw it on in the background. Just call it a day. That's awesome.
Exactly.
So what's the name of it?
Mascot TV.
Oh, just okay. I heard you say that earlier, but I wasn't sure if that was the company you're going through or if that was the, you know, okay.
Yeah. That's an awesome idea to do intros to these movies as well. Cause DC Universe started doing that with some of their older movies as well.
I've actually got the DC Universe out, but I haven't looked at any of the intros. So they're kind of doing the Turner Classic Movie approach to it.
Yeah. They're doing like an intro to the character. I don't know how many they've done so far, but they've been recording some. I think Scott Mosier said he recorded one. Not Scott Mosier. He's on another Kevin Smith podcast.
Scott Mosier is on Kevin Smith's podcast.
Yeah, well, he has like 3 of them. Hollywood Babylon.
I forget his name. He's an actor.
Yeah, he just did, I think, the Superman one. Some reason.
Okay. I forget his name, but I know who you're talking about. But yeah. Scott Mosier is also on Kevin Smith's stuff because he just did the new Grinch movie.
Yeah.
Scott Mosier. But anyways, so that's cool. I'll have to check that out. Definitely. I mean, I'm always looking for something in the background. Like when I'm doing stuff like editing stuff or whatever, I like to have something playing. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't take up, you know, I'll be trying to get stuff done and be like, I want to watch this weird spaghetti Western. I'm just going to watch this instead.
Probably one of the most famous. It's sad because it's one of the most famous horror films out there. Yet it's in public domain, and that's The Night of the Living Dead.
Oh yeah, you know? And I'm not showing that tonight. Tonight is actually I should have been a little more clear. I show public domain stuff, and I also show Hide and Creep and Interplanetary because I have the rights to those movies. And there's another movie that my friend Andrew Bellware, who's a filmmaker in New York, directed called Pandora Machine. And he got the rights to that one back, and so he lets me show that. Eventually, that's another thing I would like to do, too, is talk to more independent directors, you know, low-budget directors, and show some of their stuff. I just have it. There's always, you know, there's always so much to do. Running a half-assed TV channel while trying to finish up our last feature and get it out on Blu-ray and everything was more than I could bear.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's a great idea though. Like, I mean, at that point, it's almost like, you know, especially because of how tough it is for indie filmmakers nowadays. At that point, if you're able to do that, it almost would be worth to charge, you know. So that way money can go back to some of the filmmakers, you know, a lot of them are struggling, you know?
Sure. And even if it doesn't come to that, I think that eventually, well, like I said, right now on a good night, you know, I'll go check the stream list and I might have like 7 people watching at a time. I that actually happened just a week ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, 7 people, because usually it's like nobody watching it, you know, usually it's just a stream going out into nowhere. So if we ever get the viewership up to the point where it would be worth it for a sponsor to come in, then we could either, whether we're doing a subscription or, you know, we're getting money from a sponsor, then obviously the filmmaker could see some money that way. But if nothing else, you know, maybe we would do a thing with indie filmmakers where we would say, hey, we're going to show the movie, and during the commercial breaks, we're going to like show a link to order your movie on Amazon, you know? So, you know, something like that. I obviously haven't thought this stuff through yet.
Yeah.
Or totally through, but all that to be said, we do show Night of the Living Dead because I mean, it's a Stone classic and it's in the public domain. It's probably from a quality standpoint, you know, it's one of the best movies we show. Tonight, I was celebrating Hide and Creep. I was showing, Hide and Creep's probably on right now. And later I'm showing Plan 9 from Outer Space, which also has a big influence on Hide and Creep and is also a public domain movie.
That's awesome. And now going into Interplanetary, because you're more of a sci-fi guy and Plan 9 from Outer Space, you know, whatever.
Right. It's,
you know, so that made me think of it, obviously. But now is there plans to do more out of the genre, out of the typical genre? Because, like, you know, obviously Interplanetary is more of a sci-fi, but there's, like, some horror, like, gore elements in there.
Absolutely.
But is it are you planning on stepping out of that typical horror box moving forward?
And you know, it's funny. Well, I mean, as I've said repeatedly, you know, we do these, you know, independently, you know, finance on our credit cards, you know, the old fashioned way. So we're limited to a degree just on, you know, I got $7,000. Let's see what we can do, you know? So as much as I love Interplanetary and as much as I'm proud of it, that was really overly ambitious considering, you know, I mean, cause there's spacesuits and all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff. So it seems like that all the ideas that we come up with lately, they for better or for worse, they tend up in the horror genre, you know? So if we are able to put together another feature, my guess is that it'll end up being another horror movie. I don't think we're going to do another zombie movie. I feel like that we've kind of, not to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't seen it, but I feel like we kind of painted ourselves into a corner at the end of the last one. So I'm just going to leave that alone.
But, I mean, I think Hide and Creep and For a Few Zombies More, I think they're good bookends. Like, I think
it's a nice duology. Yeah, I think so too.
I do think your next movie should be a werewolf film.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's going to cost us.
That's like my favorite subgenre is, you know.
Well, I mean, and the thing about werewolf movies is they are wonderful and there's so much subtext and so many ideas you can play with. But after like American Werewolf in London, after those metamorphosis scenes in that movie, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I just feel like
you could go that way, but you could also just go the classic Universal monster film way. You know,
what if you do something
great style as well? Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
What if you do something like you do a like a mashup of a werewolf movie and like the newest, the remake of Maniac, and just have it completely be from the perspective of the werewolf. So all you have to do is get some hand makeup. That's it. So just make sure there's no windows around. Honestly, reflections.
No mirrors, no windows. That's wonderful. That's a great idea. I feel like if you're going to make a werewolf movie, I feel like if you don't show the wolf at all, people are going to feel like they got ripped off, you know?
Well, maybe once or twice, and then, you know, just do the makeup for one day, get what you need done in that day, and then be like, all right, put these gloves on, you're a werewolf.
Which is kind of how we did Interplanetary, the reptile, whatever monster in Interplanetary, we probably only did him for 2 or 3 days, you know? So it was probably, that's a good point. That's a good point. We have talked about, I mean, it's so easy to talk about like making a Sasquatch movie, but then to actually like build a Sasquatch and shoot a Sasquatch movie is a completely different story.
And I agree with you 100%. So like there's some movies that are pretty great until you see the Sasquatch and you're like, what the hell just happened? But then there was one movie that we saw where it was a Sasquatch movie and you really didn't see the Sasquatch at all. But it still was a good movie. You know, think of how little you saw Jaws.
I was literally just about to say it worked for Jaws, you know.
Yeah.
And who's going to argue with Steven Spielberg, right? I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
Wolfie's going to argue with him. He's just like, I will. Let's set this up. That's the next sit down. Just Wolfie arguing with Steven Spielberg for a half hour.
I was going to say, back on the werewolf thing, you could go the Paul Naschy thing. If you don't know who Paul Naschy was, he did a lot of like Spanish werewolf movies, and it was just really over the top, you know, costume.
I know the name. Do you remember any of the titles that he did? Off the top of your head, Paul Naschy sounds that like I said, that name's familiar. I'm just not placing the. I'm not putting him in any movies.
Well, Scream Factory has actually put out two of his volumes, two of his collections.
Okay, you know? That might have been where I saw it on their catalog. Yeah,
he basically looks like the Spanish version of Wolfman Jack. You remember Wolfman Jack? It's like, seriously, he's got the pompadour, his hair's all kind of pulled back and everything. And but yeah, it's just his style of he always played the werewolf, and his style of werewolf, you basically, it was almost like a Godzilla suit in a way. It's just like a giant costume that he put on, and it was cool. I've always liked the Paul Naschy stuff, you know. I mean, but,
well, it worked for him. That was his thing.
Yeah.
Chance is doing his own thing. He doesn't want to be this Paul Naschy guy.
Okay, so I can say the same thing about Maniac. Okay,
well, I'm just saying. That's a different take on the movie. Different take on the movie, right? So think outside the box. You know, like, hey, we can't afford this makeup. Let's do it differently so that we can still do the movie.
Or you could do a vampire film where you don't really need anything.
Just teeth.
Just stylize someone, you know, and hey, there you go. Yeah.
Please don't make them sparkle, please.
Yeah, don't make them sparkle. As long as you paint down a widow's, just paint down a widow's peak. Paint down a widow's peak, and have them count a bunch. I don't know.
My wife was just watching Ginger Snaps for the first time a few weeks ago, and I hadn't seen that probably since it came out on DVD. And that's a really good werewolf movie. Have you guys seen that recently?
I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, it's been a very long time.
I was really surprised how well it held up. There's this great like goth teen angst thing going on, you know, and then there's this crazy werewolf stuff on top of it. So it was fun. It was fun revisiting that.
I love the fact that Anthony Perkins' two kids both went into, you know, horror, because Emily Perkins is the younger daughter in that movie.
No, that's it. That's wait. Anthony Perkins from
Psycho.
Oh my gosh, that's his daughter.
Yeah, and his son Oz is from Oz Perkins was in Dead and Breakfast.
Oh wow, and you know, I think Dead and Breakfast played at our local film festival 100 years ago, like 2001 or whenever it would have been.
That was another zombie film I fell in love with.
You know. I don't know if I've seen that one. I might have. The problem with film festivals is there's too many parties going on to actually go see movies, you know?
I don't know. I've only been to one film festival and I didn't go to any parties.
Oh, man. Well, if you guys ever want to make the trip down to Birmingham, we will totally treat you guys at Sidewalk. It's a wonderful festival. All the theaters were in the walking distance of each other. It's people always come down and they're like, hey, Birmingham's a lot nicer than I thought it was going to be.
The only time Leo and I went to a film festival, it was awesome. Don't get me wrong, it was great, but we went there as the show. So we had a booth, like a table set up, and we were interviewing directors before and after the movie and talking to people about the movies and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool, but we didn't really have time. Like we didn't have time to even see some movies. Like there's a lot of movies that we wanted to check out that we just couldn't do, you know.
But was which festival was that? Was it a local one?
It was up in Buffalo, New York. It was called Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival, and it's a great time. It's like almost a week long, and it goes on for quite a while, and it's like only one screen, so there's a ton of movies playing over like a week. Yeah. It's a good time though. But so, what do you have in the works? Like, what do you have coming up?
You know, we've been we've spent so long trying to drag this last movie over the finish line. And literally today it was like, you know, we finally got the DVD and the Blu-ray done and released and ready on Amazon. So I don't know. I'm always me and Chuck, who directs movies with me, and Josh, who we actually, it's funny, we met Josh. He plays a dead body in Interplanetary, and in the last movie he moved up to makeup and effects. So the three of us see each other fairly regularly, and we're always, you know, kicking around ideas. But, you know, as I get older and, you know, got the day job, and it's really fun finishing in a movie, but getting it there is tough, you know, because we're all, you know, I mean, on a good day, our crew is, you know, seven or eight guys. So we're all doing, you know, three or four jobs. I mean, and these are first world problems. I know a lot of people are not lucky enough. I mean, you know, you're lucky if you can make one feature. I mean, we've been lucky. We've got to make three. Will we be lucky enough to make four? You know, it's hard to say. It's hard to say.
Now, but, if it's something where you could, do you think, like, if you had the opportunity to do this full time, that you would want to do this full time? Or
I mean, yeah, the only thing that sucks about indie filmmaking is working 40 hours a week and then working another 20 hours a week as a filmmaker. You know, if I could just work 40 or 50 hours a week as a filmmaker, I'd be in heaven. I mean, that's my dream job. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, unfortunately, I got the filmmaking bug relatively late in life. I was in my 30s when we did Hide and Creep. You know, if I'd gotten the bug when I was 15, you know, maybe I would have went straight to Hollywood after high school and started working as a PA and tried to work my way up through the system proper. But I mean, I'm 47 now, so, you know, I'm a little long in the tooth to go start making coffee for some guy, you know. So it's kind of what's the old thing? Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. No,
I've never heard that.
But that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, I feel you though. There's a lot of things that I kind of wish that I had tried, you know.
Yeah.
Up. And I just turned 43, and I'm just like, ah, man, you know, I've always said, like, you know what, one of these days I'm gonna try this, and I'm like, now I'm 43, and it's like, do I really want to be like, hey, I'm gonna go try this now? Like, yeah. I don't know if that would really work. I don't know.
Yeah. Am I gonna skydive this year? Probably not. I probably would have done that younger.
If I do, then, you know, I would just put, like, in my obituary, like, he said he always wanted to do this one day. And I guess it. Oh, well.
He probably did.
Yeah.
So between writing the movie, shooting the movie, and editing the movie, I mean, I know that you finished the movie up in 2015, but how long did it take for you to go from, we're talking about For a Few Zombies More, from, you know, initial idea to final cut?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, and you know, the funny thing is when we made Hide and Creep, we didn't know what we were doing at all. I mean, you know, so we were lucky. You know, we just were hoping to finish a movie, and it ended up being, you know, fairly successful for us at least. Interplanetary was way over ambitious. It was, you know, this epic sci-fi movie set on Mars, you know, that we were shooting on our credit card budget, you know, so there were all kind of problems with that. The new movie was actually the easiest one we've done. It was still just difficult. The initial idea, I think I'd mentioned maybe on the earlier show that Michael Shelton, our actor, actually said, hey, why don't we do a sequel? And this would have been like in 2013. So the idea, the hope was, we're going to go and we're going to knock this thing out really quick, and we're going to get it done in time for the 10th anniversary of the original movie, which ties into the fact that in the movie itself, in the sequel, and For a Few Zombies More, it's set 10 years after, you know, Hide and Creep. So it was all going to be this meta thing where we were going to have the premiere of the new movie 10 years after the premiere of the old movie. And we ended up going over schedule about a year. So it was supposed to take 6 months. It ended up taking about a year and a half. Now, keep in mind, you know, we're talking about shooting, you know, just shooting weekends and an occasional night. I think after it was all said and done, there were 35 shooting days or partial shooting days on For a Few Zombies More. And we were kind of, to a degree, this was the first movie that we worked with an outside editor. Our friend Mike Cunliffe, he came on board. And Mike's a great guy and a great editor. So between me and him and Chuck, we got it cut pretty quickly. So I'm guessing conception to like premiere at the film festival, which was honestly a bit of a rough cut. We tweaked it some since the festival, but just to get it in a condition that we could show it to the public was probably about a year and a half all total.
Wow. Those are the ones, man. I mean, we always hear about these passion projects that take that take more than a year. Pieces of Talent took 4 years for Joe to put out. This is a year and a half, and usually it's those ones that they take the longest time on that they spend a great amount of time getting the story right, getting the editing right, getting all the. So it's a good thing that it takes that long, you know.
Yeah, it's you're right. You don't want to just, you know, throw some stuff together. It does make it a challenge just from a stamina standpoint, you know. Yeah. And again, especially when you're working during the week and shooting on the weekends, it can turn into a bit of a grind. Luckily, we'd spread it out far enough that, you know, we would shoot, you know, a couple weekends in a row, and we would take a couple weekends off. Because like I said, it was a year and a half, you know, 36 days or 35 days spread out over a year and a half is not, you know, too much. But that's the other thing that I would like to, you know, I'd like to get better at shooting faster. I've got my friend Andrew that I mentioned in New York. You know, he'll knock out a science fiction movie in 10 or 12 days. And that just blows my mind. I'm like, why can't I do that?
if he has like all 12 days, like available, like 12 days in a row, I'm sure like if you have to split it up the way that you're doing it, I'm sure it takes longer to get back into the swing of things every time you pick it back up.
Yeah, and that's a great point too. And when you start a new project, even if it's with guys that you worked with before, if you haven't made a movie in 3 or 4 years, you know, everybody's going to be a little bit rusty. So everybody kind of has to find their rhythm again. Our movies are so far apart, you know, technology changes. We shot our first two movies on 16mm film. We shot our last one on a SLR camera, you know, on a digital camera. So every time you get into a new project, there's you spend a couple of days just everybody kind of getting used to each other again, and everybody getting used to the equipment, getting used to the new story, whatever that is. So there is a bit of a ramp up, and you don't want to spend too much time ramping up because you've got to get good pretty quickly because, you know, you got to start shooting useful scenes.
Yeah.
The other thing is the fact that, you know, shooting on film, that's got to be a little more, not adventurous, but a little more cumbersome, considering you gotta shoot the film, you gotta develop the film, then you gotta. Whereas I'll shoot on digital, it's got to be a lot easier. I mean,
and probably cheaper too. I would think.
Yeah. I feel like they both have their ups and downsides, though.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Like film looks like film, so it's like. It looks awesome, and you know, but there's ways to make digital kind of look like film. But yeah,
well, and that was kind of the thing that I love about film is a film camera, a film motion picture camera, is really simple. There's all you can really do is set the f-stop. You can adjust how much light comes into the camera, and you can pull the trigger and roll the film. And then you send it off to the lab, and they transfer it to digital for you. We've never finished a movie like on a film print. You know, we've always done it like kind of like a TV show or like a direct to video movie where you go straight to tape or straight to digital. But the nice thing about the lab is the guys that work at the lab. It's expensive, but they really know what they're doing. So when they send your film back to you, it looks good. I mean, it looks like really great. It looks like a movie, you know. When you shoot digital, I have learned that you spend a lot of time taking what came out of the camera looking pretty flat and kind of boring and trying to give it that pop that film has, you know, which thankfully we have computers. Hey, does somebody else have a cat?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, your cat looks a lot like my cat. Who's trying to break into my room as we speak? He's scratching at the door. But they both have their film and digital both have their advantages. I feel like with digital, a lot of the work comes in the post-production flow to make it look right, as opposed to with film, where a lot of it just looks good, you know, coming out of the lab, you know. So
now, but can I ask what camera and what program you're using for?
Oh yeah, yeah. We can, if you want to start talking about workflows, we can get really, really nerdy about that. So the camera is actually an old camera by today's standards. It's a Canon 7D. It's probably 8 or 9 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. Slightly modified. It's got a filter in it that basically keeps the picture from getting kind of jaggy, for lack of a better word. I don't know if you've ever seen digital cameras where if you shoot it like a tight pattern, it'll kind of shimmer a little mm-hmm. bit. Yeah. They call it aliasing or moire or whatever. So it's got a filter in it to kind of prevent that sort of thing. So it's the Canon 7D, edited in Adobe Premiere. We probably started in Premiere 14 and now it's Premiere 18 because it's been going on for a few years. And Magic Bullet is a company that makes post effects. I use a lot of their stuff. They've got color correction software. They've got a denoiser, which helps with scenes that you shoot in low light. It helps clean up those sort of scenes. And my favorite thing, it's one of those things that I feel like is kind of a secret, and I'm always torn on whether I should even tell anybody about it. But there's a software called Film Convert. It's a plugin. It's really affordable. I think a Film Convert license for Premiere is like $100 or something. It's not bad at all. But what Film Convert does is you tell Film Convert, I shot this footage on a Canon 7D with these settings, and it uses lookup tables to emulate the look of actual film stock. So you can say, even though I shot this on my Canon 7D, I want it to look like Kodak stock 7233 or whatever. Mm, wow. You can add the grain there if you want. So it'll actually emulate the film grain of different film stocks that Kodak and Fuji make or used to make. And I'm telling you, if you're shooting video and you just want a quick and dirty, like, hey, just make this look better for me, just running that Film Convert pass on, it does so much. I'm not going to say that For a Few Zombies More looks like we shot it on 35 millimeter film, but it looks a lot. If I showed you the camera raw files, you would go like, wow, this looks a lot more like film than it used to, you know? So it definitely helps. So, but yeah, it's Film Convert. It's one word. If you want to look it up, just do a Google search for Film Convert. And like I said, if you're in post-production, I think it's money well spent because it's really an affordable license. And it's, I got my money's worth out of it, like, you know, 2 hours after I installed it. I was like, oh, yeah. At my day job, I shoot some corporate video stuff and I'll run everything through Film Convert there. Just, I'm like, hey, it's corporate video. There's no reason it shouldn't look nice, you know? So I'll try to make the corporate video look like, you know, like we shot it on, you know, Fuji, whatever.
That's awesome.
So is that a one-time buy or is that?
Yeah. You know, with Adobe Premiere these days, you basically have to buy a subscription. You pay them by the year or by the month or whatever. But yeah, the Film Convert license is one time and you're done. So if, like I said, I don't know if any of you guys do like video post production stuff, but really worth looking into if you're into that sort of thing, or if any of your viewers do.
Yeah.
Well, we are running up onto the 10 o'clock hour. So I want to remind everybody, we're talking to Chance Shirley, and if you check the show notes down below or up above, you'll find a ton of links for his stuff there. A Few Zombies More is available now, today, on VOD and physical media. And if you want to check out the first episode or the first movie in the series, Hide and Creep, it's available on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Yes. As soon as the show is done, go to Prime, watch Hide and Creep, then email Chance. Just find his email anywhere.
Or you could go to his mascot.
Nope, no, email him. Email him and tell him how much you like the movie, and then go to his TV channel, and then watch it again, because it's going to be on there. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're rerunning it tonight on Mascot at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something, you know. So there you go. But that being said, or you can send me a tweet and tell me how much you like it, and I'll, like, you know, retweet you and shower you with adulation.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll do that.
So, or you can go out and find a hard copy of it.
God damn it.
You have plenty of options.
People go crazy. The hard copies are really hard to come by these days. Though I do think that there are a few on Amazon you can get used for like $6 or $7. So.
I think I paid $2 for that.
Wow. The thing is, you got it like at Hollywood Video, so he had already been paid for it already. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You got what you're supposed to get from that.
So I got like 30, 35 movies that day, you know, all the $10. Something like that.
We didn't show the trailer for Interplanetary, so we're going to play that now, and then when we get back, we'll start wrapping things up. Here we go.
People of Earth.
Hi, this is Lisa with Mars Base 2. We've encountered a bit of a situation. We were attacked today.
You guys archive the live show, or is it only live and then it's gone forever?
We archive it. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. I would be curious to see what it looks like going out into the real world, because obviously I'm just watching the Skype call, whatever.
Yeah. The full show has the camera switching in the lower thirds and all that stuff, and the trailers in between. And we are back, and we urge you to definitely check out Hide and Creep. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. Well, not for free, your $120 subscription or whatever.
Yeah, your Amazon Prime that you paid for every year.
Yeah, and then
it's paying for Hide and Creep.
Yeah, and then even though you're paying for it, they decide to give, hey, let's give everybody free shipping for the holidays. So
why not?
I do remember that Tony, Mr. Tony has nine fingers, he has Hide and Creep on one of those 10 movie sets that he got from Amazon.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I don't remember what the title of it is, but you can definitely find it over on Amazon. Just type in Hide and Creep. Go to Amazon, type in Hide and Creep. It should come up on one of the 10 movie sets. But it's there.
I was so proud about that because I said we live in Alabama, and a lot of people, it's rural around here to a large degree. So we have a lot of Walmarts, and whenever Hide and Creep showed up on a 10 movie set that showed up at Walmart, I called my mom and I was like, Mom, I don't want to tell you that I made the big time, but you can get the movie. You can get my movie at Walmart now. And she was like suitably impressed, you know? So it was really fun when we hit Walmart. That was one of our career highlights.
That's pretty great. No, I mean, it's, you know, those 10 movie sets, a lot of times there's stinkers in those sets, but you find some real like good gems in those too.
And the thing is, it's like with the 10 movie sets, if you find just one movie because you're only paying like somewhere between $5 and $10, you find that one movie. You get your money's worth. Yeah.
Not anymore. You don't pay $5 or $10. You know how much that 10 movie set is going for?
No.
$64 right now.
What?
Yeah.
Tony.
Because it's out of print.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that being said, I saw somebody had a new copy of Hide and Creep listed for like $70. I'm like, no way. Don't do that. You know, that's ridiculous. The sad thing is I probably have 200 DVDs of Hide and Creep under my bed. It's just like, what am I going to do with them? You know, like if I ever see you guys out on the street, I'll hand you a box of them.
Okay. Dude,
go to a convention.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actually hoping to we're hoping to go to they're having Days of the Dead in Atlanta in January. And my wife and I just went as customers last year and really had a good time. And so me and Chuck and Josh have been talking about going and setting up a booth and selling the new movie and selling the old movie and, you know, whatever else we can come up with. Hopefully we'll be at Days of the Dead in Atlanta if we can get it worked out.
Get like
you, Chuck, and, you know, Michael and Mia, Catherine, to sign a couple of copies, you know, and so those two.
Sure. Looks like Leo's trying to say something.
Yeah, Leo was trying to say something.
Yeah, no, that's a great convention to go to. There's also one. Where does Deadly Grounds go to? Hell. Where is it? Hell, Michigan.
He goes to a lot, but The Days of the Dead is looks amazing. It looks amazing. And like every time I see, like, there's that in Texas Frightmare, and like there's a bunch of these ones that I want to go to every time I see it. I'm like, God damn it.
Well,
I've heard that Texas Frightmare is like the horror festival in America. But I mean, it's in Texas. It's a bit of a haul. Days of the Dead in Atlanta is just right down the road for us. It's a couple hours away. So yeah, last year, Malcolm McDowell was there and talked for like an hour about, you know, the Halloween movies and Clockwork Orange. And, and it was like totally awesome. You know, I liked that Days of the Dead was a small festival, but it wasn't so small that they couldn't get some big names, you know. So it was intimate, but at the same time they had Malcolm McDowell and all these kind of guys, you know.
Yeah, we see Malcolm at conventions like pretty regularly.
Yeah,
we were actually supposed to go to ScareCon New York because we do some moderating as well at panels. Yeah, but I was supposed to do one with Malcolm McDowell, and I had to cancel because of finances. So yeah, there's that. Oh well,
I feel so bad for you.
I got to do some cool ones. The last one I did, I got to do a panel with Elvira, and I did one with Dee Snider. So can't go wrong with either of those. Great.
I just looked it up. It's Hell, Michigan. Deadly Ground says it's like a 1-day event, and it looks like it's 14 hours from Alabama. But he says he does more in that 1-day event than he does any of the conventions he does for the rest of the year. It's just an insane amount of business that goes through that 1-day convention.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's also, I don't know how far it is from Alabama, but there's Kansas City. They have a Crypticon.
Is it Kansas City, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, which is funny. Our cinematographer for our last movie is living in Missouri these days. So
you have a couch to crash on. Anyways, Leo, we should probably wrap things up.
We should. So Chance, where do you like people following you?
Twitter's my favorite. I'm at Crewless, CREWLESS. And I'm also at Crewless on Instagram, CREWLESS. And you can actually go to, we have a website like old people, crewless.com. It's not a fancy site, but I try to keep it updated with links about where you can watch the movies and buy the movies and all that kind of stuff. So
awesome. And you can always check the show notes. I have those links down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us. Yo.
So you can find me at Boy Meets Phone on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you're doing your social media. I should probably be somewhere around there. Also, Yo Saint Laurent on those same social media channels. And of course, you can find me here.
And also Best Buy for the next 4 days straight, right?
Yeah.
4 days if I'm lucky. 4 days.
Yeah.
Wolfman.
You can find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolf Band, Twitter at The 13th Wolf Band, Tumblr, 13th Wolf Band, The Prowl, every Sunday on The Dorkmean, every Tuesday on Wicked Horror Show, doing Wicked Horror Reviews with Kev. And right now, I've got up my, which video was it? The one I put up last weekend. Just go check out my latest video. Kev?
A Knuckle on Twitter and Instagram, every Sunday on The Dorkmean, Tuesday Wicked Horror Show. I just recorded with Anthony Thurber. A podcast with him. So be on the lookout for that. We're talking about our top five indie horror movies of 2018. And other than that, I am nowhere else. Leo Pond, where can people find you?
Just Google Leo Pond. You'll find a bunch of stuff about me. None of it true, but more importantly, we do.
All of it's true. All of it's true.
We do this show multiple times a week. Every Sunday is the open roundtable discussion, the Dorkening, and we record that and broadcast that every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And then every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, we do the Wicked Horror Show, where we talk to awesome people like Chance Shirley here, indie filmmakers that you really need to check out. And I'm coming soon. We're going to start it first week in December. We have a brand new podcast coming to the network. And you'll learn more about it. It's going to be more comic and pulp culture stuff. It's going to be very cool. I had an awesome interview just last week with the writers of the new Uncanny X-Men. That's going to be in the premiere episode, and some other cool stuff coming through. And without further ado, we'll catch you guys later. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience, where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.